Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Andrew Smith, and Dan Friedel. Faith Perlow presents a new edition of Ask a Teacher. Finally, we listen to the American story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. But first, Katie and Andrew tell us about Chinese chorizo.
If the coronavirus pandemic had never happened, Fun Fun Ye might not have learned the full history of Chinese Americans in her hometown of Tucson, Arizona. Ye was a top chef or cook in New York City when pandemic-linked business closings ended her job and career plans. She decided to move back to her hometown. She also decided to revisit her passion for public art. Looking for ideas, Ye researched the history of Chinese immigrants in the Tucson area. On the Tucson Chinese Cultural Center website, she learned that Chinese family-owned food stores were a successful industry in the city, beginning in the 1900s.
These food or grocery stores were more than just businesses. They were also lifelines for the area's Mexican-American communities. The food stores, also called grocery stores, even started preparing Mexican chorizo. Chorizo is a ground and spiced sausage, or meat from a pig. It earned the nickname Chinese chorizo. Ye said she was very moved by the alliance formed between Mexican and Chinese Americans. She described immigration policies set during the same period as quite racist.
Chinese immigrants settling in Arizona were doing so under the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act, the U.S. government's first race-based immigration policy. Both Chinese and Mexican immigrants faced racism, even though they were critical members of the workforce. Older Chinese Americans in Tucson say they have spent years trying to spread knowledge about this history. Ye proposed building a 3.4-meter-tall statue of two chorizo sausage links. She recently won financial support through the Tucson Museum of Contemporary Art and the Andy Warhol Foundation. In support for the project, she organized a celebration called Tucson Chinese Chorizo Festival. For the month of October, several local restaurants and food trucks have been serving specials with meat and vegan chorizo.
Even many locals do not know about Tucson's major Chinese presence. The Tucson Chinese Cultural Center is a large space at almost 1,400 square meters. It serves as a community center and museum. Established in 2005, it has a multi-purpose room, large kitchen, classrooms, and a room with tables for playing the Chinese game called Mahjong. The walls are covered with pictures and histories of long-gone Chinese grocery stores. The center also has a YouTube channel that includes a video on Chinese chorizo. A lot of people don't know we exist after 17 years. So, we've been trying to get the word out, said Susan Chan, the center's chief leader.
Starting in 1900, Chinese-owned grocery stores succeeded and became an economic force in Doosan. By the 1940s, there were 130 families running more than 100 grocery stores in the city. The number of stores dropped in the 1970s and 1980s as larger food stores moved in, and young Chinese Americans sought other careers. Alan Liu's father, Joe Wee Liu, opened his first of three stores in 1955. The stores were called Joe's Supermarket. Alan Liu began working at the market around the age of 10. He remained in the business until the last store closed after 30 years in operation. He is now 74 years old and a longtime member of the center's board. Liu and his four siblings grew up serving Mexican and Native American customers. Everyone felt like they were all a big neighborhood family, he said. I'm Katie Weaver.
I'm Andrew Smith.
A large European beekeeper group held its yearly meeting this week in France. The group said it is concerned about the effects of climate change, parasites, and pesticides on both bees and the world food supply. The beekeepers said bees are dying in large amounts. They also noted that bees are not producing as much honey as in the past. The beekeepers said Europe only produces about 60% of the honey it consumes. Production in France, the group said, has fallen by more than 50% since the 1990s. The beekeeping group said its announcement about the bee situation in Europe gives beekeepers and scientists a chance to react to climate concerns. The spokesperson for the National Union of French Beekeepers is Henri Clement. He is a beekeeper from southeastern France. He said he has been working as a beekeeper and trying to keep bees healthy for 30 years. However, if he had to consider a career for himself today, he said, he might not want to raise bees. He is close to retirement and wonders if young people will take up the work. The people at the event were all talking about chemicals known as pesticides, which hurt bees. They also discussed climate change and invasive insects and parasites that kill bees and harm beehives. Jeff Pettis is an insect expert based in the United States. He is also president of Apimondia, a group that represents beekeepers in 110 countries. He said bees are at risk because of climate change. When some parts of the world are hotter and drier than in the past, the plants that bees depend on cannot grow. Sometimes, he said, there are no flowers. Without flowers, bees cannot collect pollen, which means they can die of hunger. Pettis also said wildfires hurt bees. He called the fires a big issue. Pettis wrote a report in the past about the plant called goldenrod, which produces a large amount of pollen. He wrote that as the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere grows, the amount of protein in pollen decreases. Many of the bees in North America depend on goldenrod pollen to get through winter. He said, the pollen problem could affect other plants, too. In both France and the United States, between 30 and 40% of beehives are dying each winter. French researcher Jean-Marc Bonmatin said some pesticides hurt bees more than others. A kind of pesticide called a neonicotinoid is absorbed or taken in by the entire plant. Other pesticides only affect the part of the plant upon which they are applied. The neonicotinoids can affect the pollen and nectar that is taken in by the bees. The pesticides then poison the bees. Beginning in 2013, the European Union restricted the use of some of these pesticides. The EU banned them fully in 2018. However, some countries are permitting farmers to use them again under emergency authorizations. Bonmatin said, there is one thing that might help farmers make better choices. A newly developed computer program will permit them to find out if the pesticide they want to use is harmful to bees. The farmers will not have to pay for the computer program. I'm Dan Friedel.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between the phrases as per and according to. This is Ming Wen. I just wanted to know what is the difference between as per and according to when writing an email. Many thanks in advance, Ming Wen. Dear Ming Wen, this is a great question. In some cases, we can use both of these expressions in the same way, but they do have slight differences in tone and formality. Let's start with according to. According to is described as a preposition in many dictionaries. According to means as stated by someone or shown by something. It is usually used at the beginning of a sentence. Here are some examples. According to our teacher, the final paper is due before the end of the day. According to my last email, if we do not schedule the event soon, we will not be able to do so until next year. It can also mean in a way that agrees with. For this meaning, according to can appear in the middle of a sentence. For example, the teacher divided the class according to age. Any student born before July was put in group A, and anyone born July 1st or after was placed in group B. The term according to is used very generally. The tone or feeling that we get from it is neutral, meaning neither good nor bad. It can be used in both formal and informal situations. According to is used best when we expect something to have happened, or for setting up meetings or completing requests. This use is most closely related to as per, so let's move on to that discussion now. As per means in accordance with. The expression combines the adverb as with the preposition per. Here is an example. Dear Karen, as per your request, I have listed all of the items that we need to send out by next week. In this case, it has the same meaning as according to. and we can use it in similar situations when we want to point out something previously referenced. But it is best to use as per with more formal requests that have specific times and dates. The term is often used in commercial or business settings. We can also use just the preposition per in the same way, as in this example. Dear Professor Karen, I handed in the test before the due date, per your instructions. Both according to and as per relate to what was previously said or done. According to is more general and can be used in different situations. As per is more formal and is often used for business, especially with specific due dates and requests. If you are still unsure about which to use, try thinking of the connotation of each. Connotation is the idea, feeling, or association linked to a word or phrase. Since according to is more general and can be used in a lot of different situations, it usually has a neutral connotation. In recent years, especially with many jobs going online, as per is sometimes seen in a more negative way. This has led to many internet memes showing how as per is used in emails. So you might want to choose according to, just in case. Please let us know if these explanations have helped you, Mingwen. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Today's story is called The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It is about something strange that happened long ago in a valley called Sleepy Hollow. It was written by Washington Irving. The story is told by Doug Johnson.
The valley known as Sleepy Hollow hides from the world in the high hills of New York State. There are many stories told about the quiet valley, but the story that people believe most is about a man who rides a horse at night. The story says the man died many years ago during the American Revolutionary War. His head was shot off. Every night he rises from his burial place, jumps on his horse, and rides through the valley looking for his lost head. Near Sleepy Hollow is a village called Tarrytown. It was settled many years ago by people from Holland. The village had a small school and one teacher named Ichabod Crane. Ichabod Crane was a good name for him because he looked like a tall bird, a crane. He was tall and thin like a crane. His shoulders were small, joining two long arms. His head was small, too, and flat on top. He had big ears, large, glassy green eyes, and a long nose. Ichabod did not make much money as a teacher, and although he was tall and thin, he ate like a fat man. To help him pay for his food, he earned extra money teaching young people to sing. Every Sunday after church, Ichabod taught singing. Among the ladies Ichabod taught was one Katrina Van Tassel. She was the only daughter of a rich Dutch farmer. She was a girl in bloom, much like a round, red, rosy apple. Ichabod had a soft and foolish heart for the ladies, and soon found himself interested in Miss Van Tassel. Ichabod's eyes opened wide when he saw the riches of Katrina's farm. Miles of apple trees and wheat fields, and hundreds of fat farm animals. He saw himself as master of the Van Tassel farm, with Katrina as his wife. But there were many problems blocking the road to Katrina's heart. One was a strong young man named Brom Van Brunt. Brom was a hero to all the young ladies. His shoulders were big, his back was wide, and his hair was short and curly. He always won the horse races in Tarrytown and earned many prizes. Brom was never seen without a horse. Sometimes, late at night, Brom and his friends would rush through town shouting loudly from the backs of their horses. Tired old ladies would awaken from their sleep and say, "Why, there goes Brom Van Brunt leading his wild group again." Such was the enemy Ichabod had to defeat for Katrina's heart. Stronger and wiser men would not have tried, but Ichabod had a plan. He could not fight his enemy in the open, so he did it silently and secretly. He made many visits to Katrina's farm and made her think he was helping her to sing better. Time passed, and the town people thought Ichabod was winning. Brom's horse was never seen at Katrina's house on Sunday nights anymore. One day in autumn, Ichabod was asked to come to a big party at the Van Tassel home. He dressed in his best clothes. A farmer loaned him an old horse for the long trip to the party. The house was filled with farmers and their wives, red-faced daughters, and clean, washed sons. The tables were filled with different things to eat. Wine filled many glasses. Brom Van Brunt rode to the party on his fastest horse, called Daredevil. All the young ladies smiled happily when they saw him. Soon music filled the rooms, and everyone began to dance and sing. Ichabod was happy dancing with Katrina as Brom looked at them with a jealous heart. The night passed. The music stopped, and the young people sat together to tell stories about the Revolutionary War. Soon, stories about Sleepy Hollow were told. The most feared story was about the rider looking for his lost head. One farmer told how he raced the headless man on a horse. The farmer ran his horse faster and faster. The horsemen followed over bush and stone until they came to the end of the valley. There, the headless horseman suddenly stopped. Gone were his clothes and his skin. All that was left was a man with white bones shining in the moonlight. The stories ended, and time came to leave the party. Ichabod seemed very happy until he said good night to Katrina. Was she ending their romance? He left feeling very sad. Had Katrina been seeing Ichabod just to make Brom Van Brunt jealous so he would marry her? Well, Ichabod began his long ride home through the hills that surround Tarrytown. He had never felt so lonely in his life. He began to whistle as he came close to the tree where a man had been killed years ago by rebels. He thought he saw something white move in the tree. But no, it was only the moonlight shining and moving on the tree. Then he heard a noise. His body shook. He kicked his horse faster. The old horse tried to run, but almost fell in the river instead. Ichabod hit the horse again. The horse ran fast and then suddenly stopped, almost throwing Ichabod forward to the ground. There, in the dark woods, on the side of the river where the bushes grow low, stood an ugly thing, big and black. It did not move, but seemed ready to jump like a giant monster. Ichabod's hair stood straight up. It was too late to run, and in his fear, he did the only thing he could. His shaking voice broke the silent valley. "Who are you?" The thing did not answer. Ichabod asked again. Still no answer. Ichabod's old horse began to move forward. The black thing began to move along the side of Ichabod's horse in the dark. Ichabod made his horse run faster. The black thing moved with them. Side by side they moved, slowly at first, and not a word was said. Ichabod felt his heart sink. Up a hill they moved above the shadow of the trees. For a moment the moon shone down, and to Ichabod's horror he saw it was a horse. And it had a rider. But the rider's head was not on his body. It was in front of the rider, resting on the horse. Ichabod kicked and hit his old horse with all his power. Away they rushed through bushes and trees across the valley of Sleepy Hollow. Up ahead was the old church bridge where the headless horseman stops and returns to his burial place. "If only I can get there first, I am safe," thought Ichabod. He kicked his horse again. The horse jumped onto the bridge and raced over it like the sound of thunder. Ichabod looked back to see if the headless man had stopped. He saw the man pick up his head and throw it with a powerful force. The head hit Ichabod in the face and knocked him off his horse to the dirt below. They found Ichabod's horse the next day peacefully eating grass. They could not find Ichabod. They walked all across the valley. They saw the footmarks of Ichabod's horse as it had raced through the valley. They even found Ichabod's old hat in the dust near the bridge. But they did not find Ichabod. The only other thing they found was lying near Ichabod's hat. It was the broken pieces of a round orange pumpkin. The town people talked about Ichabod for many weeks. They remembered the frightening stories of the valley, and finally they came to believe that the headless horseman had carried Ichabod away. Much later, an old farmer returned from a visit to New York City. He said he was sure he saw Ichabod there. He thought Ichabod silently left Sleepy Hollow because he had lost Katrina. As for Katrina, her mother and father gave her a big wedding when she married Brom Van Brunt. Many people who went to the wedding saw that Brom smiled whenever Ichabod's name was spoken, and they wondered why he laughed out loud when anyone talked about the broken orange pumpkin found lying near Ichabod's old dusty hat.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.